Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, this is Randall Rouse and Rich Bergeron, and we're coming at you with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And we have Tom chimed in. I was trying to connect, but we'll have him on in any second. And Tony's going to be joining us a little bit late. Tony the Tornado. He'll be on. And we have plenty to cover. We don't have a guest tonight, but we do have plenty of news to cover. We got UFC fight to recap, a lot of boxing news, a little bit of celebrity boxing. How's it going, Tom?
Hey, we're on, bud. Okay.
Yeah. And we got Tony chiming in a little bit late tonight. He'll be on. He's going to call in like you this time, so we'll be waiting on him. But we got so much to talk about. Big week in boxing.
When do we not? it's just a labor of love that's never completed.
Exactly. But we had UFC 169 over the weekend. I actually fell asleep because Jose Aldo's fight was that boring. But I watched all the fights up until then, the main card anyway. And then I heard about the controversy. I read about the controversy. But I was curious what you thought about it, with Uriah Faber getting stopped controversially.
Well, the consensus, and kind of my opinion also, I think that it may have been a bit premature, but I'm having to question if it would have mattered in the long run.
Right.
This is six title fights in a row that Uriah's come up short in. And this is just a terrible setback for him. But that Burrell was just all over him. I mean, it was just a very bad night for Uriah. And he was terribly frustrated after it was over. I mean, he did feel that Herb Dean, who's usually right on the money. I mean, let's face it, it's a tough job, what he has. And Herb Dean's usually pretty good, but like you said, I think that there may have been a bit of a premature stoppage, but in the overall scheme of things, I just think that Burrell had a little too much.
I think I have Herb's number somewhere. I should call him.
Yeah.
It was funny because I went to an event in Worcester, Massachusetts, back in, like, 2008. And Herb was doing some UFC fights back then, of course, but he was actually backstage trying to give people his number. He wanted to.
Uh-huh. And what year was this, Rich?
2008.
Oh, okay, a while back. Yeah.
Well, so he gave me his number, and he texted me. And I texted him, like, 50 times and never got the interview. So, what he was doing, he was just people or what?
Yeah, because I've run into him a few times. He used to, back in King of the Cage days, I guess King of the Cage is still going, but I think mainly it's a West Coast thing now. But back in 2004, 2005, it migrated back here, back here to Ohio. And so I talked with him. There was another fight. Another card that he worked down in Indiana, in a casino down in Indiana. And have you seen the, I don't think you were following the sport back in 2003. Was that was a little before your time?
No, I was still interested in watching.
Okay. Yeah, well, do you remember the Frank Mir fight with Tim Sylvia?
I do. He broke his arm.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, it's tough to forget.
I remember at first, because I was watching it with a crowd of people, and at first it seemed like that was a premature stoppage, and everyone was upset because Sylvia wanted to keep fighting. Of course, Sylvia has the nickname the Maniac for more reasons than just being from Maine, I think, you know, because even Mira said afterwards, well, okay, you want to keep going, you're fighting with one arm. And it seemed initially that Herb did stop the fight a little too quick. But when I seen the replay, it's like, oh. So we discussed that a little bit, and I had to congratulate him on that because he had a quick decision to make, and it's almost like he almost heard the bones breaking. You know, he didn't imply that he heard it, but he knew. He knew enough to stop that one, so he called that one really pretty good. And he said, normally I think he does a pretty good job. I wish we could get him on. I'd like to ask him a little more about that one.
Yeah, well, if he still has the same number for that, then maybe I'll try calling. But you know, there's other ways probably too to get to him. Information through some people. But yeah, that would be a great interview. We've never really had a big time UFC ref except for Kim Winslow. Was the first female referee on there. And she was pretty entertaining. She might know her business. I remember she talked about working with him, so that'd be great. So anyway, getting back to the results there. We had a pretty one-sided fight between Aldo and Lamas in addition to the main event there. But there was really no controversy there. Aldo did the job as far as I could see. Difficulty.
Yeah, this kind of brings back an axiom that we talk about so much about why would you try to match styles with someone when you may have an edge somewhere else? Now, Jose Aldo is just incredible on his feet. It's not a good plan to go in there and trade leg kicks with him. And Lamas either just felt that I wanted to beat him at his own game, or he just was unable to get it to the ground. And I think Aldo won the first four rounds of going away, and I had Lamas winning the last one. But you just sometimes, you know, we see this in boxing a lot. When someone with some decent boxing skills decides he's going to stand there and trade with a superior puncher, or the other way around, when a big puncher decides he's going to try to box with the slick boxer. I mean, you go with what got you there. Because the old cliche, even if Lamas would have been felt that he was better at trading at leg kicks than Jose Aldo, why give him the best chance to win? Take it to the ground. That was Lamas'
right.
strength, and it just did not come out that way. And I don't know. I didn't see any post-fight interviews with him. Maybe you did, but I don't know if he's blaming it on the strategy or if it's because sometimes, you know, we've seen this again and again and again where guys' egos get so big that, okay, I'm going to beat him in his own game. And that's usually not a winning proposition. So it was a big setback. I had thought that fight would be far more competitive, so I dropped the ball on that one.
And, I figured it would be a little bit more entertaining. But, you know, Jose Aldo is pretty dominant no matter what, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now that his next fight is going to be title. The super fight that they can't get out of GSP and St. Pierre, GSP and Silva. So they're going to make it happen with Aldo and Pettis. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good fight. Makes sense. Nobody really at his own weight is challenging him, so why not fight at a catch weight? Let's see. We have some other fights. I'm just trying to get down to the results here. We had Alistair Overeem versus, speaking of Frank Mir. That was a pretty decent fight for Overeem, but, you know, Overeem and Mir, you think, would have been quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of the people that Mir has fought recently and how he's done doesn't bode well for Overeem to, number one, you know, come away with a win there in that fashion, not by knockout. So, I mean, he handled him, but... I just don't think he impressed anybody.
Yeah.
Calling a guy who's not even really in the promotion and has not even showed any back, it's not a very good move, honestly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, calling out Brock Lesnar. Well, I think, first off, focusing on Frank Mir, it just seems like I don't know if it's a mental thing, but I just didn't see the fire. Because when Frank came along years ago, I mean, he's been around forever. I remember he was, I think he made his debut either 2001 or 2002. Yeah, probably 2001, I think. I remember, and he had some fantastically innovative submissions back then. I remember he pulled the most unique arm crank on Pete Williams I think I've ever seen. Mir was just a genius back then, and he just had that fire going, and then he'd have a few setbacks, and I think that motorcycle accident was disastrous, but he did come back, and when he knocked out Big Nog back in, December 2008, if my memory serves me right, yeah, he beat Big Nog at the stand-up game. And it seemed like Mir was back, and then he'd had a couple other setbacks, but then he'd always seem to, just when you count him out, he would come back and do something amazing. But now it just seems like, almost like he was going through the motions, or like his mind was somewhere else. I mean, I don't know, because I always really like to watch him, but he's got to really think where he's going now. And you remember in the old days of pro wrestling, they used to have a loser leave town match. And I don't know if that's what this is, but I understand he was supposed to be meeting with the UFC brass in this week sometime, so I don't know. I haven't heard that he was cut from the promotion. But and Overeem, I guess Dana was a little upset with Overeem, Overeem's pace, but I think Overeem fought rather smart. I mean, it wasn't an exciting fight, but Overeem's problem in the past has been cardio, especially with all that 60 extra pounds that he has now. Those big muscles need fed, and he didn't want to burn himself out like he's done in his past two fights. So,
right.
Yeah, but yeah, I would agree with you that calling out Brock Lesnar, everyone's kind of scratching their head saying, okay, where are we at here?
Yeah, not too smart on his part on that one, but, he's causing more problems than just that. So I guess apparently his decision to train over in Thailand for this fight pissed off a newcomer. This is kind of a side story. The real kind of crazy story here is Anthony Rumble Johnson just recently renewed a contract there, I guess. Well, not really renewed. He got kicked out of the UFC a while back. Not long after. Actually, we interviewed him maybe a year before he was out of the UFC. But that was a while back. Anyway, he went and went undefeated in World Series of Fighting. So Dana White brought him back, and didn't take him long to make a headline, because he was really quick to criticize Overeem about changing camps. And Overeem was supposed to be part of the Black Zillions camp, and the people over there still say he's welcome, but apparently, for some reason, Anthony Johnson does not like the guy. And he says, well, I don't care about him. But he also says he's not a Black Zillion, he's on Team Alistair only. That's kind of interesting, because, that might be a reason for why he didn't disagree, because he's sticking to what works for him. He was changing things up when he should have stuck to what was working. If it was working, I don't know. But he definitely needs somebody a little bit more competitive to really show whether or not he should still be a contender there in the heavyweight division. He should go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Stranger to pissing people off. He had that big rift with Glory a while back. And trying to get the main event or the main card up here, but apparently only got the preliminaries.
Yeah, I believe Anthony's first opponent is going to be Phil Davis.
Yeah, that's quite the throwing him to the lions there.
Mhm. Yeah, and I think that's going to be quite a clash of styles, because Phil's bread and butter is his great wrestling skills.
one of the things that I remember about I don't think it came out in the interview, but when I talked to his former manager, Kent Pavia, there, he got in trouble himself with the UFC back a few years ago when he apparently disseminated some contracts that were kind of the company property. He didn't realize they couldn't be shared, and he shared. Well, he was at war with the UFC, and I was at war with some of the same people in court, and I met him out in Vegas, and he told me a story about one time kind of on his way out, on the outs of the UFC, and he brought Anthony in for the weigh-ins, and Anthony was having a real, really, really tough weight cut, like, the guy was going to pass out in a second, so this guy, Kenny, I mean, he really needed to be there for his guy. He was the only one there helping him out and bringing him around to places and making sure he was all right, checking on him, Dana White found out that, Ken's in the building there, and he's with Anthony, and so he had them thrown out. He had Ken Pavia thrown out of the building. And so Anthony had to sit there by himself and deal with it. But, yeah, he told me that story, and it's a familiar story, I think, for Anthony, because he's been in that situation in a lot of those fights in the UFC before he got thrown out, where he had to cut a tremendous amount of weight and wasn't very healthy for him. So now that he's gone to light heavyweight, it's probably going to help him out a lot more, because he won't have to kill himself to make weight.
Yeah, because I believe he was fighting at welterweight for a while.
Right.
And I think he fought Josh Koscheck. And then I remember he had two fights with Kevin Burns. And Burns won the first one. I think Johnson got him in the rematch. But, yeah, coming down from God only knows what. I mean, if he's at light heavyweight now, he's probably coming down from about 225 for that. My God, all the way down to 170. Oh, wow. I don't know what to say, but yeah, I think he's found his niche now, and I think it'll be interesting if he can keep the fight standing against Phil Davis. I think he's got a great chance.
Yeah, that should be a good one. Definitely be competitive, I would think.
I mean, Phil Davis is great at takedowns, and I'm sure Anthony's working his ground game also, but I'd have to give Phil the edge on the ground, but getting Anthony Johnson down was never easy at 170. So at 205, it's probably going to be even more of a challenging assignment. So I'll be looking forward to that one.
And for the other preliminaries, at 155 pounds, we had John McGehee versus Alan Patrick. Patrick won that bout by unanimous decision. And by the way, that was such a familiar theme that Dana White called it a disaster full card because of all the divisions.
Hmm.
He had a record, I think, too. Anyway, we had 25 pounds. Chris Carriasso versus Dana Nen. Carriasso won by unanimous decision. Kind of a Tom Watson at 185 pounds. Catone won by split decision. Twice, and Tom Watson got a 29-28 nod as well. So didn't get the other two judges. Then we had Al Iaquinta beating Kevin Lee by decision. Clint Hester facing Andy Enns. Had Hester won by unanimous decision. There. Pretty much by a huge margin. 30-26 on one card and 27 on the other card. We had Rashid Magomedov versus Tony Martin. No surprise, Magomedov won by unanimous decision there. And we had Neil Magny versus Ghassan Umalatov. Magny won that one by unanimous decision. So that is every fight on the preliminary. And actually, somebody brought this up in some article. we've already discussed it, so I kind of went on the plane. Hey, that was our idea. But
okay.
I'm the first ones to bring it up. But we had discussed on the show about what to do about decisions and the fighter pay system that came up, the fighter pay controversy we talked about. But basically, the whole concept. Because you got to have a finish goal that fighter in their head have, you know, a bonus for finishing, I think. That's, you know, especially Daniel White, and that in so many decisions. Yeah, you got to do something about it, not just flap your gums. I think it's going to change.
Yeah.
The other side of it, too, is hurt. I don't want to go out there and risk getting hurt to get a bonus. You know, because $50,000 extra doesn't mean much if you're not going to have a fight for another year because you've got a busted knee or something like that. But, so, I don't have any other fights in front of me. I'm still waiting for this thing to load. So we'll get back to the rest of them. We got Tony on the line.
Tornado Mania is in the house.
All right, buddy.
Got all my errands done. Oh, it was horrible today, guys. I'm at work, and we have a thing. Like, you cannot log off until it says 5 o'clock. You log off at 4:59, they're like, rah, 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 rah. You logged off early. Well, it's like, despite the fact that I logged in, you know, early today just because they needed extra help because we've been so backed up with the snow and the offices closed and all that bullshit. 4:59 and like 34 seconds, my phone goes off, you have to answer it, and all you hear is a guy saying, hello, I have problem, I received bill, I do not know why, please help me. Oh, shit. One of the things, the best way, just call back tomorrow, bro. Preferably 9 to 4:59. But can't do that, because they monitor you. Okay, when's the first thing you got a bill on? 2012! Oh, come on, man. I'm going to go home. And the thing is, it's with the weather being so bad here, and with all the ice and all that, you know, you want to leave while they're still relatively light out. Because I got a 45-minute commute. I'm like, the last thing I want to be doing is making that in the dark when it's colder, the roads are icing up more, and you can't see the ice. I wanted to use foul language. Well, I had an interesting week, you know, just outside of the combat sports realm. Monday night, I'm sitting there in my office like I'm sitting right now. I look out the window. I see an emergency vehicle going down the street. I said, huh, with the lights on. I said, huh, that's interesting. We had a 6-alarm fire at a barn 300 yards about from my house.
Oh.
And that baby was torched. Thankfully, it was an equipment barn with no live animals in there. And so we're watching, you know, just fire truck after fire truck, a police vehicle come down the street. Some of them parked in my driveway. It was a mess. And then what made it suck more was you have a 6-alarm fire. It means you have literally 6 fire companies squirting water on this barn. Well, what do you think that water is going to do overnight when it's around 15 degrees?
Yeah.
You could have had ice hockey practice on my street trying to get to work on Tuesday. And then we got hit with the ice storm Tuesday night. So the last 2 days commuting, we're not pretty. And, you know, we got, like, trees down all over the place. People don't know how to drive. They're like, oh, my God, I see a tree. It's bent. I'm going to start backing up. No, you idiot, you don't back up. You maybe do a 3-point turn. You don't try to drive in reverse because, guess what? You probably have somebody behind you that doesn't want you to rear-end into them or back up into them, I should say. So, yeah, my last 2 days have been just...
Did you see the story today? I don't know where it was. I just kind of caught a flash of it on the headline news there, but there was a story where a highway patrol guy arrested a fireman who was asked to move the truck out of the high-speed lane when they were attending to somebody who was in an accident on the highway.
Holy shit. That's horrible.
So, moved the truck, and the guy was like, no, we got a patient to deal with here. So the cop arrested, and it was on camera and everything. And the guy's like, do you really have to do this? The guy's like, we're just trying to help. The guy's like, I told you to move it, and he's like, good, I'm not going to arrest you. Truck, huh? I just want to run through the ones that I didn't get on the UFC card here before we go on to more news. Ali Bagatanov beat John Thicker by unanimous decision. And probably the knockout of the night, because it was the only knockout, Abel Trujillo beat Jamie Varner by knockout in the second round, 232 mark. And we had another decision. Alan Patrick Silva Alves versus John McDessie. Alves won by unanimous decision.
What did you think of that decision, Rich? Were you able to see that fight?
The Alves versus McDessie?
Right.
It doesn't stand out in my head, so if I did see it, I don't remember much of it.
Okay, well, yeah, that was kind of one of those don't let it go to the judges fights, in my opinion.
So there's not going to be another shooting card, I think, until February 27th. Am I correct on that? I think so. Anyway, if I'm wrong, we'll find out next week. We got some big boxing news, celebrity boxing, to talk about. We mentioned last week that Jordan Zimmerman was looking for an opponent. I wanted to do some celebrity boxing while I've heard... read on multiple different websites that my group are every single day now, almost flooding the boxing update, that he's finally signed a match with George Zimmerman. But even though they're hyping this fight, apparently DMX has not confirmed it. And he says he needs to see the paperwork before a deal to see him. But he came out in an interview before he was even chosen out of 15,000 applicants. DMX was chosen. And he came out and said not only is he going to break every rule in boxing to beat Zimmerman, but he's going to piss on his feet afterwards.
Now, who was this Rich? Things kind of faded out there. Who was going to fight Zimmerman?
DMX, the rapper.
Oh, okay.
He's 43 years old, a little older than George, but he's a big-time rap superstar. Been around a long time. He's got a lot of big hits. He probably doesn't need the money, and usually these guys give the money away to charity anyway, which causes more controversy because George doesn't give his money to an animal rescue named which one. He doesn't bring mad attention to him. Right. DMX has said all that stuff, and then once you go public, they think that a promoter trying to set this up is not the guy in the ring. If he's promising to do that stuff, you probably don't want to put him in the ring for that kind of a fight. So apparently, they think it's going to sell. Well, they're doing it. Then, of course, now Sharpton had something to say about it. And he said, We must be very careful not to glorify or in any way sidestep the implication of making someone who stood the pain was killing an unarmed young man named Trayvon Martin into a cultural celebrity or hero. It is perfectly legal for him to exploit his fame, but we should never forget what he is famous for and not behave like he is a celebrity based on gifts or talent or contributions to society. Yikes. So watch the how you really feel. DMX is not confirming it, despite promising to be that. And we'll see. I think it'll happen, but what good is it going to do?
Now, how would you like to be refereeing that fight? That would be a challenge.
I'd ref it.
Yeah.
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 If he's going to break every rule in the book, it's not going to be a fight. It's going to be disqualified.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. We'll have a quick disqualification.
So I don't know how they're going to make that work, but it is what it is. We'll see if it pans out. You know, it does make it interesting. You got this pink friend break every rule in the book to win this fight. Number one, I mean, if George is really as bad at boxing and fighting as they said he is trial, then why would he need to cheat? Number two, you know, how's that going to make you look if you have to cheat?
Yeah, good point, good point.
A big, tough rapper, you know, talking about packing heat and shooting people and stuff and living large. Can't even win a fight, thing?
But remember, Rich, the key word, talking about it, not necessarily doing it, talking about it, yeah, so maybe he's not as tough as he thinks he is.
He's not really representing the thug life there, I don't think.
But, see, again, that's the beauty of getting in the ring. Let's just find out.
Yeah.
We'll just get in here, and we'll see who the best guy is on that night. No more talk. All the talk and everything else goes out the window. That's the beauty of it.
And you know what the best thing? I've said this a thousand times on the air. A lot of things that I love about the sport of boxing, and one of them is, you know, when I was talking about working out on the heavy bag. Because the heavy bag, you know, don't hold grudges and it don't run with a gang. And, like, you know, if you say just turn into a street fight between Zimmerman and DMX, and, you know, one of them has their, and we know Zimmerman's reputation of, you know, street fights. But, you know, somebody has their boys there and this guy's getting his ass kicked for sucker punch and this, that, because a lot of people ain't lucky enough to, first of all, go mano a mano, and second of all, they ain't got enough, the pride and respect that if they're losing, to be able to admit, hey, I lost, you know, then it's, I got to get my boys and this and that. That's the great thing about being in the ring, where, you know, it's just you.
Right.
The only fighter I remember his boys would physically get involved was Riddick Bowe. I remember three occasions, no less than three occasions, where some type of controversy happened in a brawl, in a bow fight. We had the fight with Elijah Tillery, the first one in USA, and a lot of that was Tillery's fault because he was a thug piece of shit, where, you know, after Bo knocked him down, he tried to kick him in the nuts and this and that, and then Mark Newman got involved, and they pulled Tillery over the ropes like a battle royal. And we had the fan man fight where the guy crashes into the ropes and he's into the crowd, and all you see is people. And thankfully for these guys, they weren't the cell phones of today that weigh about a half an ounce and crack, you know, if you look at them too hard. They had them big, 1990 Zach Morris, about the size of an actual phone cell phone, and they were smashing this guy over the head with them.
I remember that.
And then let's not forget about the Galata fight, the first one, which was it ranks up there with one of the worst things we've ever seen. And that was, once again, Rock Newman and all Bo's boys, you know, causing, you know, an issue that should not have escalated to what it did.
Yeah, and you remember Lou Duva was carried down on a stretcher that night, if I remember that.
A lot of guys were legitimately scared for the man's health, because you figure,
yeah,
Lou Duva's 91 now. That was 18 years ago. So you're still talking about a man who's in his 73, 74 years old.
Yeah. And I know he'd had heart problems going back to the 80s.
Exactly.
You know, the early 80s, if I remember right. So, yeah, that was a nightmare. I mean, that looked horrible.
And then they always dropped him off the stretcher.
Only in boxing. You know, only in boxing. It's like the Three Stooges in boxing. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, that is... Well, if you remember that night, though, that was an interesting night, because after 20 minutes of a battle royal outside, I mean, just a massive gang fight, all the Poles got together and kept their flag.
Right.
That night. Yeah, that was dangerous. And I remember George Foreman kept trying to talk about calming them down. I'm saying, George, why don't you get in there, okay? You can calm them down.
Yeah. Well, I remember George. Was it a Legendary Nights episode of it? where it was something I might have just caught it on YouTube just recently. And I remember watching some of that, and I remember George even saying, "Don't do that, son. Don't do that. Don't get in there, son. Don't do that." And he was talking to some of those boys. Okay, Riddick came from Brownsville, Brooklyn, same streets Mike Tyson grew up on. And let's just be nice and say it's not a place you want to vacation. And part of the thing is, like, just like Mike did, Riddick had a lot of hangers on. And these are guys that were, you know, not good people. Let's just face it, you know. A lot of thugs, you know, a lot of troublemakers, you know, want to be tough guys. And now you're running into a situation here, and, you know, what do they want to do? They want to jump somebody. And, like, hey, Riddick was a tough guy. Riddick was a good fighter, you know. He had a lot of trouble with his conditioning sometimes. And I think he was blessed to have a guy like Eddie Futch, you know, because Eddie really guided him. And did a lot of things the right way for him. I think if Riddick had a guy that maybe was a little bit less disciplined, or maybe a guy that didn't run something straight shit, and a guy that was maybe a little less classy, then I think he would have really had a lot of trouble in his career. I'm just being dead honest when I say that. And, you know, Riddick was a tough guy. Riddick was a good fighter, but you know, a lot of his boys weren't of that mentality to get in there and go man-to-man with a man. You know, they were on there, let's take a cheap shot, let's grab a weapon, because I can't let anybody get ahead of me, you know, or I don't want anybody to get the advantage on me. So I got to, you know, do a sneak attack. You know, that's just
half boxing story here to talk about. Dana White and Brady Roach are at odds over some cut Roach made in an interview with Fight Hub TV. Over there on YouTube right now. Part of it, and I read some of the description of it. Full interview. But Roach basically said that he's been working with George St. Pierre. And George actually told Freddie, according to Roach, that, hey, I want to take 2 years off from MMA. And he mentioned that he also was having migraines before his fights. So that was troubling. And Freddie advised him at that point that he should probably take a year off rather than 2 years. And he also mentioned that Dana White had called at one point when he and GSP were together and on their way somewhere to train or something. And the phone call actually was discussing the super GSP and Anderson Silva. Both got through their opponents. They were supposed to fight each other. You know? And obviously we had GSP step away, and then had the broken leg issue with Silva, so it's not going to happen no matter what. So, well, maybe it'll happen in the future. Broken leg issue. And that's another side note. Anderson Silva's already back in the gym, apparently. I don't know what he's doing. See that headline today that he's back in the gym already, which is incredible. And also saw a headline about that Joe Rogan encouraged him not. But Dana White is apparently very unconvinced, I guess you could say, that the reasons Freddie Roach gave for St. Pierre's walking away, and he said it was a whole different set of issues, personal problems. It had nothing to do with Dana or drug testing or anything else, White said. And this is based on what apparently GSP told him and Lorenzo Fertitta that night of the fight about why he wanted to step away. But I would think when you're talking to your bosses rather than when you're talking to your trainer, there's going to be two different stories a lot of times.
Yes.
So I would trust Freddie, not only because I like Freddie more than Dana White, but just because he's just way more trustworthy, in my opinion. And, you know, I've never once I read an article about him lying about something or any kind of major controversy like this. So I'm going to believe him every time over Dana White. So check that interview out if you get a chance. It's over on YouTube. Fight Hub TV probably has it too. Well, they definitely have it because they did it. So we're on the website. So. Another interesting UFC story about fight that got changed to a no contest. And, basically, it's kind of a weird situation. Jessica Eye was suspended for a year for a positive drug test. But she did not fail for a performance-enhancing drug. It was actually a blood-thinning medication, which she was using to treat a long-term acute stemming from an accident when she was hit by a car at 16 years old. So you would think with those circumstances, there would be no suspension. Actually, it's kind of a... There is kind of a technicality to it. She's going to be able to continue with her UFC 170 bout against Alexis Davis later this month. And it's actually one of those situations where the suspension is considered probation. And she'll still be allowed to fight. So I don't know what's the problem.
Which rule? Was it the Nevada State Athletic Commission that suspended her?
Yes.
Okay, because when this work schedule calms down, I've got to get up to the gym and get her on the show because she had verbally committed to coming on when I was up there a while back. So I've just got to force the issue here with her. Oh, man, that's just...
Sorry, not Nevada. This is Texas. Texas Secretary of State.
Well, okay, I think this is a whole can of worms, though, we get into when the Athletic Commission overturns what the judges have done. You know, I know we've kicked this around before, but wow. And not even give a reason for it. I don't believe the Texas Athletic Commission
who broke the story had to petition the Secretary of State of Texas to get the administrative order on why the thing was kicked for no contest. The thing that bothers me about this is not only was she suspended, even though it was a probationary suspension, she's also fined almost $2,000. And it would seem to me that, you know, with these guys getting exemptions for TRT, this girl has a documented situation that she's had since she was 16 years old, according to this. So why couldn't she come up with an exemption? A blood thinning medication. It doesn't make any sense. You know, how is thinner blood going to help you in a fight anyway? I don't know. But anyway, that's the reason why that was changed in the contest. I think we did mention that last week. We didn't have the answer. And Tony's buddy, Hank Lundy, is going to be moving to the big town. He's going to be on Showbox here. Let's see, what is it? February 21st, the night before the next UFC bout there, I think UFC 170 is on the 22nd. So Hank Lundy is going to be facing Angelo Santana. He is 14-1 with 11 knockouts. He's going to be in the main event. Hank is 23-3-1 with 11 knockouts. It's going to be a 10-round lightweight main event. And... also going to have a fight with Amir Imam, 12-0 with 11 knockouts, and Jared Robinson, 14-0 with 6 knockouts, as the co-main event. So somebody's has got to go there. And Don King is involved, so he's got some comments here in this piece. My first boxing promotion in Cleveland with back in 1972. It was a charity event for Show People Care. Show for People Care. Benefit for City Hospital, and it featured Muhammad Ali in an exhibition. For our great pick card on February 21st, we're calling it Cleveland Show for People Care. Let's do it for Cleveland, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It's going to be a terrific night of fights, a dynamite show in Mayor Frank Jackson's great city of Cleveland. We'll be in the city and the state where people are the most important. That's done again for you. So, it's kind of a big step up in attention for Lindsay, I think, but not competition. I think even though the guys with Santana is got a pretty decent record with a high knockout percentage, I think he's based near as much talent as Hank. Definitely not a great fighters. We step and fight the total to 15 or more fights. That makes a big difference in experience. So I'm thinking he can handle it pretty well. He looked good in his last fight too on ESPN. So
Hank's most important talent is a lot of times when we get leaders, you need to stay focused when you pass the hand. I know he lost his first fight to Dan Molina a couple years ago because he let himself get unfocused during the fight, and he was beating him. He won the first 7.5 rounds, and it was a 12-round fight. He won the first 7 rounds cleanly, was winning the 8th round, and he tried to pull a Floyd Mayweather type of move, you know. He did a spin around the guy almost with his hands at his sides, and he went straight back, and the guy just threw a lunge and left hook, and boom, down he went, and he was hurt. And thankfully it was 10 seconds ago in the round, but you could tell he never recovered. And from there he ended up getting stopped. I think it was like the 11th round. He had one round to go. He was still ahead on the cards. Ended up getting stopped. He had another loss on there, and I think with Hank's problem sometimes, it's when he sometimes will fight, and I don't want to say down to the level of his opposition, but what he'll do sometimes is he won't throw enough punches. He'll take long lapses in between rounds. He'll drop his hands at his sides, and he'll start, like, pacing his feet back and forth, kind of like a bull does, and he'll stick his tongue out, and he'll be looking, but he's not punching. And when he gets away from his jab, even for a guy like, you know, he's usually shorter than most of his opponents, but he's got a fantastic jab, especially when he boxes conventional. I know he's naturally left-handed, and when he goes conventional, which is something I normally don't recommend doing to a lot of fighters I train, I usually say if you're left-handed, you stay southpaw. But he switches back and forth, and when he goes conventional, he's got a very fast, but at the same time very hard thumping jab, and he's hurt guys with it, but he gets away from that sometimes. And I remember watching TV and screaming at the TV, jab, jab, would you fucking jab? And, you know, and his trainer, like, I knew his first original trainer was a guy by the name of Charles Rainey. They call him Geach. I've known Geach for years because Geach was training guys out of my gym. Very good teacher, very good trainer, and after he left with him, he went to a guy by the name of Sloan Harrison. Sloan Harrison was training Bernard Hopkins for a while, for a couple fights. So he's got quality guys. Sometimes he needs his focus. Now, I actually put out a message yesterday that, he said he's ready, and he said he's prepared, and he's ready to knock somebody out, and you know, hopefully, we'll see the best of Hank Lundy.
And, ESPN, Friday Night Fights, fight we just saw not so long ago, Mendez versus Barthelemy. Update on that one. Mendez, Department of Labor and Industry, stepped in and changed the result to a no decision.
Yeah, okay, they changed it to did change it then?
They did change it. So he's lost the title, Bartholomew. Not too many people are happy about it, except for Mendez in his camp. But Bartholomew says, first off, I could not disagree more. This is going to take away my title as a terrible one. The referee did not call a foul that night, so how could the commissioner fool him by watching TV later? I'm better, more talented than him, and I knocked him out. Now I have to do it again. If they put me in the ring with Mendez again, I will hurt him again. They haven't done him any favors by making him fight me again. His legs were going weak with every punch I even touched him with. Now I know exactly how to get to him, so it'll be even worse next time. I was glad he survived to fight another day, but he is making a mistake fighting me again. Some of those other people had the same remark, vein of argument. They said, co-promoter Luis de Cubas said, first of all, ludicrous if my fighter trains hard, does nothing wrong, becomes world champion, won't have any commission. Unilaterally take his win away without a hearing. Rancis is the champion of the world everywhere, but in the eyes of the revered boxing body called the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. There is a reason there are not more world title fights in that state. There's no instant replay in boxing in Minnesota. If the rules were interpreted improperly, the commission can change the outcome. However, the referee didn't do that. The referee did not rule their foul was committed that night, so how can a commission in an office play second referee weeks later? That's not fixing a misinterpretation. That's acting as a second referee, and it sets a very dangerous precedent in boxing. Now, I know I've said this before, that there needs to be some situation like this. Maybe not in this particular fight. I don't agree with this in this fight. But in these situations where a horrible decision is made, there has to be some kind of recourse. Now we get a situation where there's some recourse, but it's for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
And they make some good points. I mean, why put this guy who just got his ass kicked back into a fight like this? Or he risks the same type of outcome. On the other side of it, you could argue that, Mendez probably was greatly affected by a tough weight cut before this fight. He pulled at his best, and he'll be better next time. But how much better can you be? It wasn't like a fluke late-round knockout. This was early in the action. And Mendez really didn't have much of a fight at all on his part offensively. He just did not look good at all. So how much of that can you blame on conditioning or health because of the weight cut? Probably not much.
Well, I'm sure he's just telling himself it was an off night, and what else could he do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the weight cut at some point had to affect him at least a little bit, and what I noticed in there was when he got hit with that one body shot, it actually picked his foot up, and his legs actually started shaking a little bit, and I know from doing weight cuts like that, I remember, like I said, I fought a guy by the name of Rick D'Artone. I had fought him twice before, and previously, I never blinked when he hit me. And I remember after we did that weight cut, and I was getting into that fight, and I was just so drained. It was one of the few times I ever sat down between rounds. I remember one of the first punches he landed, and my legs shook. And I said, what the hell? And that's what happened to me in the third round. He caught me in the right hand. My legs actually collapsed. But that could be part of it. He could have been weakened from the weight cut. But if you look at that one bloody shot he landed, you can see where it actually made his legs start shaking. His one leg even came off the ground. But I'm trying to think of certain fights that had completely different outcomes like that. Now, I remember Floyd Patterson fought Sonny Liston, got knocked out in like a minute and a half. Fought again, got knocked out in a minute 40. There was no change. And no matter what Floyd did, nothing was ever going to change in that fight. But there are other times where I've seen fighters get beat and beat early and dominated that have come back and won the rematch rather impressively. Terry Miller, Simon Brown kind of comes to my mind. In the first fight, Simon caught Terry early,
and within four rounds had him knocked out. In the rematch, Terry really came in focused and beat the hell out of Simon Brown. That's one I can remember. Floyd Patterson losing to Ingemar Johansson the first time, going down seven times or something in the third round, and then knocking Johansson out cold in the rematch. So, yeah, is there a chance that Perez can come back and win impressively? Of course. But I don't know. I don't know if I saw enough of him from that first fight. I mean, he looked, you know, hurt. He looked like he was dominated. And I got to go with Bartholomew.
Yeah, I would agree.
But they got to give at least a good lag time before the rematch, because you had a man that was legitimately knocked out, no contest or whatever they want to call it. The man was still concussed pretty heavily. You got to give him time, then you got to give him time to get back in shape and train.
Well, we'll see what happens in that one. This year, I really like Bartholomew. I think he's a good fighter, but this is not a rematch I want to see. Rematch I want to see is with him and Arash Usmani. And Usmani has been calling for that one. He's fighting it about the last night. He's that one. So he needs to get it eventually. But, it's terrible to see a guy like Mendez, who couldn't even compete in the first fight, getting an automatic rematch here, when Usmani just about did beat. I think he did beat Bartholomew the first time, and he still can't get it. So that part of it sucks, too. Anyway, shifting gears again here to mixed martial arts. The amateur MMA fighters out there, all over Canada, I guess. I think the United States is going to be part of it, too. They're calling it the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation. They're going to be hosting their first world championship at the UFC Expo in Las Vegas, starting on June 30th. So they're going to be taking about 32 athletes, both men and women, to this week-long event. And the Canadian National Mixed Martial Arts Federation is IMMAF representative in Canada, and they're hosting a national open tournament in Ontario in March to find the most qualified fighters in every weight class to represent the country at this big world championship in Vegas. So you might see some new UFC fighters emerge out of this, even though it's only amateurs right now. It's stranger to the UFC to have a guy make his pro debut in the organization. It happened a few times before, so I wouldn't be surprised if somebody gets picked out of here to either be on the Ultimate Fighter or go right to the UFC. But the basic concept is it's an open tournament where any amateur MMA fighter can enter. So, but they caution that if you don't think you're one of the best, don't show up. If you believe you have potential, you have to enter the event. Interesting. And the coaching staff will include Antonio Carvalho, Adrian Woolley, Jeff Joslin, and Rory McDonald. So, Glover Teixeira is also in the news. He committed a brain injury debate, and it's a major issue in MMA and boxing right now. Light heavyweight UFC fighter recently, he said, the way people train is the most dangerous thing because you train every day. Some people spar 5 days a week and that's where the injuries can occur. If you go hard every day, you're definitely going to have problems at the end of your career. So, that's interesting, guy from the UFC making those comments. And Dana White, at the same time, trying to distance himself from the idea that George St. Pierre might have stepped away because of possible brain injury there with him having migraines and forgetting time and thinking he was abducted by aliens. So, anyway. Another story, the UFC is jumping back into the Middle East. April 11th, they're going to have a big event on Yaz Island, which is an entertainment center over in Abu Dhabi. The main event is going to feature Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, 34-8-1 MMA, 5-4 in the UFC. And he's going to be facing Tough 10 winner Roy Nelson, who's 19-9 in MMA and 6-5 in the UFC. And they'll be fighting in an outdoor arena constructed specifically for this event. And it's a pretty big market over there, I believe, especially in Abu Dhabi. You know, you have so much of the Brazilian community over there participating. Story. Former Tough competitor Bubba McDaniel, who I interviewed not too long ago, posted his 2013 earnings online accidentally. $33,000 he made. The message was supposed to be intended for his accountant, but was sent on his Twitter account instead. He doesn't want people to think he's complaining. He says, "I want to say that this was a mistake and I'm totally appalled. I didn't need to have anyone think I'm complaining. I've dreamed of being an athlete my whole life. I'm not complaining at all." And here's a big story. There's been a couple different reports on this. We've got boxing and MMA coming together, and not only that, but Bellator and the UFC coming together on an issue here. Altogether, they've donated $600,000. We've got UFC and Bellator in collaboration with Golden Boy Promotions and Top Rank Boxing. They've all donated $600,000 to the Cleveland Clinic's Lou Rulo Center for Brain Health. And this donation was announced during a press conference in Las Vegas last Tuesday. UFC CEO Lorenzo Fertitta and UFC lightweight champion John Jones and former Bellator lightweight Michael Chandler. And they basically they had a big press conference. They talked about what can be done to prevent brain injuries. And John Jones says, "I'm not worried about the studies we'll show, but I'm interested to hear what we can do to prevent injuries or help out in that manner. I do remember a time in high school when I was wrestling and I attempted to throw, but I landed on my own head. Now that I'm older, I realize it was probably some type of concussion." So there's 400 fighters involved in this study of both MMA competitors and boxing. 25 of those are officially retired. And the data is being collected against the control group of individuals naming education level who have not experienced MMA. And they eventually are hoping to have 625 to 650 participants. And if you want to start your MMA career, Tom, and get in there for a fight, I got a guy for you.
Okay, I'm listening.
If you look him up on Sure Dog's Fight Finder, he has a record of 2-23. Kenneth Allen, and he's on the underground. He's also known as Kenneth Micah Allen, M-I-C-A Allen. And he says his record is 10-2 on there, but actually 2-23. But he actually tops the list of the, quote, 25 biggest tomato cans in MMA history. The guys on the circuit, they call me Band-Aid. If someone gets hurt or pulls out of a fight and they need someone to step in and keep the fight on the card, I have no problem taking it. And he also explains that, you know, it's not just that he doesn't train, it's just that he doesn't have time to train. Fighting, but I ended up doing other stuff at work.
Now what weight division does this guy fight at?
Kenneth Allen, I'm sure. Doesn't say it's these here, so I'll have to leave that up there, so. John McCain is in the news. For one, he had a Twitter pic put out with him standing back-to-back with John Jones. And I stumbled across it and saw a lot of the comments were very negative towards John Jones because you know that John McCain is famous for saying that MMA was like human cockfighting. But also, at the same time, the UFC itself and some of their representatives claim that McCain's opposition to the sport is actually what helped regulate it. And apparently, he told John Jones that he's going to be ordering UFC 172 on pay-per-view. So, that's interesting. But he's turning around. He's definitely... he actually attended that press conference there about the brain injury studies. He's basically changed his tune altogether. And even Lorenzo Fertitta says I have to give him credit. Without him doing what he did back in the 90s to force regulation, the sport would be dead. It wouldn't exist. Honestly, for all the negatives he caused, he actually allowed the sport to foster and grow.
I still have mixed emotions about that. I still confess to mixed emotions here, because back in the 90s, it was just when everything was struggling and he was trying to... Well, I believe he was really instrumental in getting that cable ban for a couple years we had, starting in 97. That was referred to as the Dark Ages until about 2001. Yeah.
Well, he still isn't quite turned around completely, I don't think. As far as, you know, wanting to be toned down a little bit, basically he says he's concerned about the safety of all fighters, but he actually was quoted in this piece as saying when it comes to whether federal regulations should be imposed, he says you want to be very careful not to encroach on the state's ability to do this regulation. So it's pretty vague. But he's very big with Budweiser, which is, you know, why some people theorize he's so big with the boxing community. They're more of a boxing sponsor, even though Bud Light sponsors the UFC. So that was brought up a lot when people were criticizing him for his opposition. But he is a big-time boxing fan, you know that. And he wants to... He wants to basically have a national commission for boxing, so it's kind of puzzling that he said that about MMA regulations, about the states. I already mentioned that story. Let's see. Yeah, so he's part of that whole effort with the Cleveland Clinic. And, of course, Harry Reid was along for the ride there at that same press conference. And he is himself a former boxer and also a gaming commissioner out there in Nevada in the past. So he's definitely a guy who's familiar with fighting. So it's a pretty good group of people to be involved in this, and it's very, very encouraging. But it also could be very scary to find out what comes out of it. I don't know if they're going to be so happy. I think that's the worst investment they ever made. That's sentence. Anyway, we talked about Brock Lesnar a little bit earlier with Alistair over and calling him out. Well, he's probably not going to be signing anytime soon with the promotion, the UFC, but CM Punk just left the WWE and apparently his official contract end is coming up, so I guess he talked about going into MMA, but I don't think it's materialized yet. But Bellator has already expressed at least some interest in him, and in July he'll be free of any WWE contract obligations. So he might do it the same way that Batista did it with one fight as a bucket list sort of thing, but he didn't get hurt in that, so it would probably be the same thing with CM Punk, but you never know. He's 35 years old, and his body's probably beaten up pretty bad because of pro wrestling. And he does train in other fighting disciplines, but just doesn't have the competition background, so I don't think he can make a career out of it, but he'd certainly be an attractive, draw for people to go see fighting, or who is fighting. So who knows? That's a good player. But he's already got one guy calling him out, just in case he doesn't decide to do it. And it's a former Power Ranger, Jason Frank. So now that CM Punk is out of his contracts and wants to do MMA, why not me? He already said he'd fight me. I got this on video from a fan. Come on, CM Punk, we could make this an awesome fight. Plus his weight. I'll make any weight to make this happen. Well, we'll see what happens there. I think that's a perfect fight for him. You got two guys who are pseudo-famous for other things. Ricardo Mayorga back in the news. He's coming to Rhode Island for his next fight. And it's going to be a boxing match. He's officially out of MMA, and he's going to be fighting at the Twin River Casino. And also Friday, February 21st, and then Hank Lynn will be fighting on Showbox. It's going to be televised. Mayorga will be facing Raul. 16-1 with 16 knockouts. He's now a super middleweight main event. Himself is 29-8. That's big news. If anything, was just a fiasco. Didn't do well at all. So, it's good to see him go back. Running for a title. A lot of work to do. Pat Barry, we talked about last week. He retired. Well, he says he's not retired. Taking a break from MMA, he says. He did sign a contract with Glory, which is the reason why he was cut. Thought that was kind of interesting. BSP said he's going to take a leave of absence. Didn't cut him. But I guess he's not going to go into a fighting position. Keep his contract in effect. But Pat, since he has to go into a whole other organization, they have no contract with the UFC, so that's why they cut him. So it was his choice for them to go that way. He basically said he just didn't want to wrestle with people anymore. He wants to hit people. But he had a recent interview with MMA Hour and said he wasn't going to go hire officially from MMA, but just take a break. Said, I'm walking away from MMA now. I said I was retiring. They assumed that I was done with fighting forever and that was going to be the end of it. That's not what happened. I'm just taking a break, taking a time out from MMA, just stepping away from it. My last few fights, something was missing. Something wasn't there. It was a bit of love and attraction to wrestling and grappling to have them to defend and make takedowns, which is fine. That's part of the sport and that's what I signed up for. Last two outings that I had, anytime you lose a fight, get up and say, I lost. Oh, well, so what? Wasn't so much. So what? Something wasn't there. And it's not that he doesn't like wrestling. He just prefers to stand. He said, wrestling, doing jiu-jitsu for the sake of doing jiu-jitsu, that's great, especially with the gi on. I enjoy it. It's great exercise, everything. But when it comes to being in a fight, no thanks. Stand and hit each other and let's see who has the biggest nuts in the ring. He also says kickboxing's had a resurrection recently, so that helped him to walk away from MMA temporarily easier. So he's going to participate in the WKA North American Championship Kickboxing Tournament on March 22nd, 2014 here in Richmond, Virginia. Does not have an opponent yet, though, because scheduled opponent backed out of the fight. So already he's imposing quite a figure on the opposition. So we'll see if anybody else steps up to scheduled opponent. So, see what else we got. Already talking about UFC 169. We talked a little bit of a brain injury there tonight, and here's a story from the Philippines. where they're trying to have a bill filed to ban minors from participating in full contact sports like boxing and mixed martial arts. This is referred to as House Bill 3646, and it was filed by a couple of representatives out there in the Philippines, and it's going to try to regulate the involvement of minor athletes in training in non-competitive sports. Actually, coming after a 16-year-old boxer died in December after passing out at a regional inter-school match. And one of the authors of this bill said, while acknowledging the importance and benefits and the values that can be derived from participating in these sports, the measure recognizes the paramount need to protect the minors. And should this bill be passed, minors will be prohibited from competing in any full-contact sports competitions, including boxing, mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, judo, and various forms of full-contact karate. Sports organization associations or event organizers will also be prohibited from conducting full-contact sports competitions involving minors and from tapping young athletes for full-contact sports bills. Schools and sports education institutions are prohibited from inviting or encouraging participation of minors in full-contact sports competitions as well under this bill. And parents and guardians will be barred from giving, from allowing their children. And this said, such responsibilities imposed on parents, guardians, schools, and sports associations because the minors are incapacitated to give consent, nor can they waive any right of action for injuries inflicted upon them during and connection with such activities. And anyone found guilty of allowing a child to participate in a full contact sports competition will face a $15 fine for the first offense and up to $200,000 for the third succeeding offense. So events organized at school and sports institutions will meanwhile lose their business permits and licenses and may even be closed down for allowing minors to participate. So that's a pretty serious.
So they say they're going to allow them to train and practice but not compete?
No, they can't even.
They can't even train.
They can't even do it for leisure. Oh, they can't even train. Nope. Mm. Can't even do it for fun, according to this bill. This all stems from a guy named Joshua Garcia, who was a fourth-year high school student. He died on December 15th after being comatose for days. He developed a blood clot in the brain after a boxing match at a regional meet organized by the Central Luzon Regional Athletic Association. The incident prompted the Department of Education to consider excluding boxing and other contact sports like wrestling, wushu, harness, and taekwondo. And boxing has actually since been removed from the Department of Education and athletic competitions. That's tough news for Manny Pacquiao's home country. I'm sure he's probably against this. But, it is only applicable to minors. Situations like Muay Thai, especially, that's like the bulk of the competition is minors. That's kind of rough. I know that Thailand is not too far from the Philippines. Not as popular in the Philippines, but Muay Thai is still pretty big in that whole region of the world. All those sports, all those combat sports, being excluded from minors, going to make it tough for any prospect to come out of that area if this bill passes.
Yeah, especially if they're competing with someone that's been training for 10 years. Yeah, I could say I agree.
Yeah. Kelly Pavlik, back in the news.
Oh, my. Now
talked
what?
About, he talked about why he was in court for this situation, but he passed out and got rushed to a hospital at his court hearing for when he had harassed a cab driver and stiffed him of his handbag on the way home from a drunken incident. So he ended up in court in Ohio and passed out. A little bit of goes to the hospital. He was awake and alert inside the ambulance, and they haven't released any information about what caused him to collapse, but it is known that he suffers from seizures, which played a large role in his retirement from boxing. And the theft case, which is over an alleged unpaid $25 cab fare, that hearing will be postponed. I've never heard that he suffered from seizures, but it sounds to me like alcohol withdrawal.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody's been drinking, you know, it's just, you get to be an alcoholic, and you have to go to a court hearing. You know, you can't drink. That's the only time you don't drink for, like, a month or something. You're going to have problems. I don't know if that's what caused it.
Yeah, I really hope I'm wrong, but you just kind of get the feeling this is not going to be a happy ending for him.
No.
I hope he can turn it around, but,
Too bad he doesn't have enough good people around him to straighten him out. Get him into rehab for good.
It just shows the power of the mind, because, remember, after that Hopkins fight, the first fight that he lost, and Hopkins was such a gracious winner, telling him, hey, it's just a loss. It's not the end of the world. Get back in the gym. If you're not back in the gym in a few weeks, I'm going to be over at your house. And he just never seemed the same after that fight.
Well, he had a habit of doing that to guys, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I know. But, I mean, I just really liked Bernard's almost like a elderly pep talk, an elderly guy's pep talk to him afterwards. And, you know, you'd have to come back from setbacks, and Kelly just couldn't do it.
Right. And that's like, you know what, and Cam, I know you weren't doing the show with us at that time. That was one of the key fights I had grossly wrong. I went through a stretch where I picked a couple way off. The fight between Hopkins and Calzaghe, I actually predicted a draw.
Mm-hmm.
I could not come up with a clear-cut answer in that fight, but I picked a draw, and I honestly, and I will still say this, I thought the fight was a draw. The way I scored it was a draw. Maybe I was just trying to get my prediction right. But I picked it where Calzaghe would be ahead early, and Hopkins would rally late, like he did so many times, especially in the fights with Jermaine Taylor.
Yeah.
I also had De La Hoya destroying Pacquiao. Yeah, that one worked out. But the fight with Hopkins and Kelly Pavlik, I picked grossly wrong. And I thought it was going to be the fact that Hopkins really faded so much down the stretch of that fight with Calzaghe that I was like, you know what, maybe he is, as he's getting older, and Calzaghe outworked him. I was like, you know, Pavlik is a guy that likes to put a lot of pressure on, throw a lot of punches. I can see him stealing rounds and winning that fight. And then in hindsight, looking at it now, I realize how foolish that was, because Calzaghe was throwing like 100 punches around. And a lot of them were slap punches, they were arm punches. He was keeping a real high pace, and that was making Hopkins uncomfortable. Pavlik was never going to keep a high volume pace like that. He was going to put a lot of pressure and do work, but they were going to be more plodding, heavy-handed knockout punches. And those are the guys that Hopkins eats alive.
Right. Exactly.
And I called back. I had a stretch in 2008 where I was horrible. You know, I thought I lost my Rain Man touch. I didn't get it back until the Calzaghe-Roy Jones fight, where everybody said I was a lunatic because I picked Calzaghe to win impressively. And I remember I posted that fight on, I don't even know if I was on Facebook yet. I might still have been on MySpace. And I remember posting that, and people were like, oh, you're out of your mind, and this and that. Jones is going to kill him. Then Jones drops him in the first round, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to go on another bad streak here. And the next thing you know, Calzaghe is cutting him up and hitting him and dropping his hands and, like putting his face right in front of him. And I was like, yeah, fuckers. Yeah, tell me who ain't got it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's too bad. It's one of those sad stories about guy that had a lot of potential and just threw it away.
The fight with Kelly Pavlik I'll never forget was the fight with Edison Miranda. And you knew it was going to be a shootout. And it actually, that fight inspired me to write an article, and I think I still have it, Tom. I have to send it to you.
Yeah.
And it was like in one night, this is when I was really first starting to write a lot of the boxing articles again. So sometimes they weren't as, they didn't flow as well as they do now because I'm more experienced. But it was a fight where it was like, on the same card was one of the best fights of the year and one of the worst fights of the year. Miranda and Pavlik was a great fight. In fact, I almost had a fight that night because I was out to dinner and I was about 30 minutes from home and I'm like, oh shit, I got to get home to see this fight. And some asshole had me parked in. And I stormed into the place and I said, whoever this is, better get the goddamn car moved now. And I sped home, and I got home just as they were making the ring walk.
Wow.
And great fight. I never thought Pavlik would, not just, because Miranda at the time was, like, invincible. He was scary. He knocked out a friend of mine, Willie Gibbs, on HBO about 3 or 4 months prior to that. Knocked him down so hard, Gibbs tore knee ligaments. And Pavlik said, I'm going to bring the fight right to him. And he did. And he ended up beating him up and knocking him out. This is when you didn't knock Miranda out. You didn't beat Miranda. And that was a great fight. Then you turn around and you had Jermaine Taylor and Corey Spinks. And Jermaine Taylor was fighting defensively against a guy who hadn't scored a knockout in over 6 years. And the fight was dreadful. I ended up falling asleep. And I wrote an article. I said, the fighters that when they're on, I don't want to miss them because you're going to get a great fight. As opposed to the fighters when they're on, I can't watch them because, you know, the only knockout or the only action is going to be when you fall asleep.
Fighting defensively against Corey Spinks. Yeah, that's wow.
That's bad. That's bad. I mean, it was 2007. I think Spinks last scored a stoppage in 2001. I think it was against a guy that was like 5-22.
Yeah.
Well, got another story here about a fighter who had some issues a while back. We talked about this story, Joe Torres, a guy who turned away a bunch of people trying to kill him, and ended up killing one of those guys. Just going to read the whole story. Joe Torres, his attorney, made some comments. His attorney said his client has received numerous death threats since four men broke into his home on New Year's Eve, leading to a deadly altercation. The attorney said he's had to move twice. He had to leave the state shortly after the incident. He's already had to leave the state to go to another state because of threats. He's been away from most of his family here in Las Cruces. During the break-in, Torres fought back and killed one of the intruders. The other three have been indicted on assorted charges, including aggravated burglary. But strangely enough, there's nothing more severe than that. The attorney says, I think there should have been attempted murder charges filed against these individuals that went into my client's house. Their intent was obvious. They made a call and made a threat, and then they tried to carry it out. He also said when you listen to the 911 call, you can hear they're trying to stab him. That wasn't a joke. That was an attempt to inflict death or great bodily harm on my client. And the district attorney there, Mark D'Antonio, hasn't decided if Torres himself will be charged for the killing of the intruder there. His office told TV station KFOX 14 it could take several months to make that decision. And there hasn't been any evidence, according to the Torres attorney, there hasn't been any evidence to suggest my client acted outside of the law that night. I think that if they had uncovered any evidence at this point, my client would have been charged. The attorney also told the news station that Torres is scared of the possibility of being charged. He says the threat of criminal prosecution is a heavy threat to hold over someone's head, and he can't move on with his life until he's cleared. On a side note, a Support Joe Torres Facebook page already has more than 23,000 likes as of this story. And
according to Torres, he says, I don't call myself a hero, nor do I think I'm a hero. I think I'm a damn good father. That's all I ever wanted to be. And the attorney for Torres also believes the intruders should face intentional child abuse charges. Torres's fiance and 2-year-old son were in the home at the time of the attack, and in the 911 call, you can hear Joe Jr. screaming. And the first part of the attack on that home was when they broke the window to Joe Jr.'s room. Matt Kohenny, the attorney, said he doesn't believe the attack was random. He said there was an incident at another party involving my client's fiance's little sister that led to the incident in which my client's home was invaded. He did not know the attackers personally. It's possible he met one or two of them during the course of his fights. My understanding is some of them may have gone to see his fights at one point, but he really had no personal relationship with them. And as far as his confidence that Torres will not be charged, the lawyer said, I don't know. I think at the very beginning of this case, I said we're in for a long haul, and I think that prediction has come to fruition. Now, that's an interesting story. I hope he gets this stuff straightened out there. No, it's that's too bad, because that's a really tough situation. I don't think he's going to be able to even fight again with that kind of stuff hanging over his head and, you know, worrying about looking over his shoulder all the time.
Now, was this alleged to be a random thing, or was there some kind of connection there? Did that ever come out?
Well, this is like I just read the end of the story there. There was an incident at a party.
Yeah, okay, that's right, yeah.
Fighter's
okay, so
fiance's little sister must have been being harassed by one of these guys, and he probably stepped in to break it up and put the heat on himself instead.
Yeah.
So he was probably defending someone's honor and got himself in a whole heap load of shit because he didn't know who these people were. And they were obviously had gang connections and obviously weren't afraid to call him up, threaten to kill him, and then go try to carry it out. But the worst part about this thing is that they would not charge these people with attempted murder. It seems pretty obvious to me that, you know, that guy wouldn't be dead if he wasn't trying to kill him. So that's kind of baffling. But on another note, different note, this is a really interesting story. I've seen it for a couple of weeks now. It just keeps coming up because it's just so strange. But it makes me wonder. Now, we know Tony's a big boxing fan. Probably a bigger boxing fan than I am. So I just turned to watch his face. But Tony, would you consider yourself such a big boxing fan that you want to have a boxing funeral?
Whoa, could you repeat that?
Like a boxing funeral, like a theme for your funeral, all about boxing.
That's actually kind of cool.
Wow, this guy, a young boxer from Puerto Rico, San Juan, Puerto Rico, a named Christopher Rivera Amaro, actually had himself basically scuffed. He was posed in death, leaning against the corner of a simulated ring with all his boxing gear on, a yellow hood on his head, sunglasses over his eyes, and blue boxing gloves on his hands at his wake in San Juan. And this was his family. They wanted to stress his boxing, and the funeral home was the one who suggested posing him in a boxing ring. The makeshift ring was set up in a community center of a public housing complex, and Rodriguez told the Associated Press, this is the vice president of the funeral home, that it took them several hours to create the scene. And they actually have done this before. They once featured a deceased man riding on his motorcycle.
I saw that.
The 23-year-old Rivera had a 5-15 record in the 130-pound weight class. And he was actually shot in the city of San Jose. No one has been arrested for the crime. So,
it's
a sad story, but it's kind of funny.
It is a sad story, absolutely. With a boxing-themed type of funeral, now, here would be my problems with it, knowing the way of a person that I am. I think it would be awesome. You know, I mean, I'm not a suit and tie kind of guy. I'll wear it when I have to. If I died right now, I sure as hell wouldn't want to be buried in a suit and tie. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to be buried in my trunks and that stuff either. Because for the most part, unless you have a super special, like this guy on the motorcycle where it's got this huge crypt or whatever, and that's gonna, that would cost the family a lot of money to get, you know, two plots or whatever to put, you know, like that. For the most part, you're buried in a coffin.
I don't think he's buried in all that, but I mean, well, he might have been, but he wasn't like, he wasn't buried standing up or anything. I don't think. I think they just did that.
Right, but okay, for the viewing and all, okay, that'd be kind of cool, kind of creepy, but kind of cool. Now, my problem is, like, say you were doing traditional and you were getting in the casket and all that shit, my thing is, like, you'd be in your boxing gear, but you're laying flat on your back like you're knocked out.
Yeah.
I didn't want to lose while I was alive, and I sure as hell would pose like I lost when I'm dead.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the jiu-jitsu gi, you could get away with that. You're just pulling the guard.
Right.
Well, on a sad note, it's too bad this young kid died. But, you know, it's good to see that he took his passion to the grave, I guess. You gotta say that.
Yeah.
And that's all the stories I have for tonight. I know we haven't really discussed upcoming boxing matches. I don't know any MMA stuff coming up, but except for UFC 1, or the next UFC event, UFC 170, I think, is February 22nd. So.
Oh, we do have one more thing. Apparently, it's come out that Chris Leben has never filed a tax return in his life. Dana White was mentioning. I didn't catch the whole story because I was just checking out, because my work schedule now is in, obviously, at that time of the year it's been insane. But I just flipped on the Underground before we started the show, and I didn't have time to read the story. But I guess Dana White was commenting on it. And Chris Leben, if you're listening, call me. This is my specialty here. We'll do an offer in compromise. We'll get you out of it, bud. But call me. The IRS is not going away. And the analogy I use to my clients, I'll say, you know what an arm bar is? Okay, when the IRS gets you in one, they can crank it pretty hard. So better tap and make some kind of agreement. So how about that? Never even filed, let alone paid.
Yeah, it could be your new slogan. Don't tap out on your taxes.
Yeah. Someone was joking about that once. They said, my nickname could be the fighting tax preparer. If his fist don't tell you his tax return well, or the IRS well. So we'll see see what Leben does here in this situation. That's going to be an uphill battle for all those years. And the problem now, his earning ability is probably a fraction of what it was just a few years ago.
When he made this revelation, did he say anything about whether the IRS is looking for him?
That I didn't have time to read the story, but I'll try to hit the Underground tonight. And see,
because Nick Diaz said the same thing, but his manager kind of contradicted it. But I mean, if you're gonna go and announce that, I mean, obviously, if you're not paying your taxes, you don't want people to know, and you don't want
because then
they'll come after.
Yeah, well, I would have to assume, because sometimes the IRS moves slow, but if they're getting 1099s, and I'm sure that the UFC is doing every proper thing business wise. And they're sending the 1099 both to Leben and the IRS. And sometimes it takes a while for the IRS to move, but when they do, when they're locked into you, it's not a good situation for Chris Leben. And then if he came out and said he's never filed, because normally they have 3 years to audit you, but in a case like this, they can go back to the lemonade stand he may have had in grade school. So this is an absolute nightmare for him.
Yeah, it's a tough situation to put yourself in. That's smart either way. Whether they know or don't know, probably not a good idea to blast them out there. Unless he's looking for somebody like you to come up and save them. But he's saying that to get help. I mean, that's a different story.
Yeah, well...
There
are things to do besides an installment plan. There's a little-known provision called an offer in compromise, and that's if your income is just nowhere near what you owe, and sometimes they'll take pennies on the dollar. So we'll see what he does. Hopefully he can get some help. If not, Chris, call us, contact us.
Yeah.
And I did watch a little bit of Friday Night Fights this last week. But for the life of me, I can't remember who fought at this point. So, wasn't that entertaining, I remember. But what do we get this week coming up for boxing? Any big cards coming up that you know of, Tony?
Well, let's take a look. We can certainly look. Hold on. Battling with the computer again, as usual. We're in February now?
Yep.
February? Yes.
I didn't discuss it, but I thought I had it pasted in my stories here, but there was another story I wanted to mention about Vladimir Putin coming to bat for wrestling. He actually made some comments recently that he's very glad that the Olympic Committee decided to change their tune on wrestling and bring it back in 2022. And he's basically really happy about it.
They're working all the way to 2022? Bring back wrestling? Bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know why they're waiting. I mean, if you're going to reverse your decision, it should be right away.
That's what I said. We got a full card tomorrow night in Northeast Philadelphia. I'm not going to be able to attend it. It's one of those fun cards of the promoter. I try to avoid many of his cards because they're always a clusterfuck. But here's what we got. We got, okay, let me count this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fights. We have 6 four-rounders. And 2 6-rounders. I already looked. The tickets for that are, you know, they're not cheap. One of the fights is a TBA. Let's scrap that one off right now. So now we're down.
The guy in the Olympics stole your hat, Tony.
What?
They just showed somebody in the stands, a parent of one of the figure skaters, wearing your freaking American hat there, looking like Clubber Lang there at Rocky Ford.
Clubber Lang? No, I got a correction. Clubber Lang was from Rocky 3, and it was Apollo Creed from Rocky 4.
Apollo Creed, yeah, that's right.
You're making a mess. It's like I went to a game last year, and a guy comes up to me drunk. He's like, well, I was drunk too. Hey, man, you look just like the guy from Rocky. Yeah, no shit. I pity the fool. Pain. I'm like, no, wrong dude. I'm supposed to look like Apollo. But, yeah, they got a card in Philly tomorrow night. Already, like, one fight to TBA. I only know, really, one of the guys on the card, which is pretty bad if it's a Philly card. We got a card tomorrow night. Listen to this one. It's in Detroit, Michigan. Let's see how many we got listed on there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 fights. 8 of them are TBAs. This is tomorrow night. Yeah. So it looks like the only card, that this should be the ESPN card here. It was probably this one from Chi-Town, Chicago. Polish fighter Kamil Lazicki. 15-0, 7 knockouts, fighting Daniel Diaz, 20-5, 1 draw, and he has 14 knockouts. Not a bad little main event there. And let's look to see what the co-feature is, then we'll look on Saturday night, because I think I'm supposed to go bowling tomorrow night, of all things. Okay, so the so I don't know if I'll even be home. The co-feature, we got we got a couple of the, a couple Spanish fighters. You may always put on good fights. We got Roberto Garcia, 33-3 with 22 knockouts. And he's one of the, he went the distance back when Margarito was just coming back. He went the distance with Margarito, but he's got, you know, a couple decent wins on there, a couple close losses. He is fighting Norberto Gonzalez, 20-2 with 13 knockouts. A decent little co-feature. Well, let's see what we got for Saturday night. I should be home on Saturday, so that's a good thing. Especially if this weather keeps getting shitty in this area. I'm a little tired of it already. Want to go to the casino. You know, but I haven't had a chance to go, because every time I want to go, it's snowing. This is ludicrous. So, Saturday, we got some fights over in Poland. We have not one fight card in the United States of America on Saturday.
Wow.
Now, let me...
Wow.
Now, let me... I saw one here. You're going to lay some of this. I saw one card in Mexico, and Fernando Vargas was on it. I said, Fernando Vargas? So when the hell that happened? Then I saw super bantamweight. Maybe three times the weight of a super bantamweight right now.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
So, not one single fight card in the United States.
Again, so that might be why the Olympics might have something to do with that, too.
Could be. We've got fights over in Russia, Poland.
Big ice fishing derby this weekend up here in New Hampshire. Big ice fishing derby in the state going on Friday through Sunday. Different sport, I know, but sometimes fishing can be better than boxing.
I enjoy fishing.
I was just out last Sunday. I caught my limit of white perch, 25 little white perch. Fish, good eating fish. Anyway, so we got nothing else. That's about
it. I'm going to tell you, before we go, speaking of fishing, two of my favorite fishing stories, both involve my father, because, you know, I always like to bust his stones. When I was first starting to eat seafood when I was a teenager, because I didn't need to grow it up, because my mom hated seafood so much, and, you know, so I was kind of, if she's not eating it, she says it's not good, and I guess it's not good. Then finally, I started getting heated. I'm like, let me try it. Then I love seafood now. But I just started eating seafood, and we were down the Jersey Shore, not the Jersey Shore with Snooki and all them, but South Jersey. And we go out on a fishing boat, and my dad used to always get seasick. And when he was thinking of drowning me for a while and all that stuff, and for whatever reason, that day, whatever he took didn't work. So he's inside, like, the cabin of the boat, and he is, you know, sick as a dog. Well, I'm on there, and I feel a tug on my line. You know, we deep sea fishing, I feel a tug on my line. And I start winding it up, and the pole is bent in half. But I feel like these little tugs on there. And I'm like, well, I'm not coiling the bottom, and it's not a rock. There's definitely something alive at the end of this line. And the one mate comes over, because he sees my pole bent, like, you know, literally in half, like a horseshoe. And he's like, no. And he pulls out his knife. He's going to cut my line. He goes, you're stuck on the bottom. I said, no, I'm not stuck on the bottom. I said, because I feel this thing, you know, pulling. He's like, no, you're stuck on the bottom. I said, if I'm stuck on the bottom, why am I still able to wind it? Because if you're stuck on the bottom, it's going to stop. And I said, no, I'm still able to wind it. I said, just let me keep trying. He wants to cut it. I keep winding. I keep winding. I keep winding. I end up pulling up a 4-foot shark. You know, weighed about 50 pounds. And so they call my dad out of the cabin. They're like, sir, you got to see. I was 16-ish. Sir, you got to see what your son caught out there. So my dad comes out there. He's like, oh, yeah, great. And he's sick as a dog. He really didn't give a shit. And they're like, sir, do you want to keep it? He's like, no. And the first mate was like, I guess I'll call him Gilligan. Gilligan was like, no, sir, you really ought to keep this. He's like, no, just throw it back. And the sir, and for Gilligan's like, sir, I recommend you keep this. And another guy was sitting there, he goes, listen, if he doesn't want it, I'll take it. And the first mate goes, listen, I'm cutting this in half, and I'm making you take half of it. And the other guy got the other half. So we go back to the campground, and we were all staying. We light up, we fire up the grill. We start grilling the fillets, and we start eating them. You would see about six sets of eyes turn on my dad. We're like, you dumb-ass motherfucker. You gave away half of that shark. That shit was delicious. You bitch. We had that one. And then up, Rich, even past your neck of the woods, I used to go up to Maine every year on a vacation. We used to go to Bar Harbor right off the coast. Loved it. Bar Harbor. So we used to go to Bar Harbor every year, and we would go to, I guess it was Stone Harbor or whatever it's called, and we would go. The one guy, he had a personal charter fisher boat. He would take about 20 people on there. It was kind of a small boat, you know, really intimate, really nice. And, you know, you'd fish for about 4 or 5 hours, and, you know, you'd catch your cods, and you'd, you know, sometimes you'd catch, you know, a few things here, a few things there. And then at the end of the trip, he was a commercial lobsterman, and everybody would draw a number. So then if you draw, say, number 5, you know, he starts going to his lobster traps. So now it comes up to lobster trap number 5, that's yours. Anything legal in that trap, you're free to keep. So we're like, oh, shit, okay, that's a good deal. We used to go on that trip for like 10 consecutive years. The guy was a great captain. So the one year we're on there, and we're catching some fish. Well, I snag an Atlantic sea bass. Now, if you go down to New Jersey, you hit a school of them, you'll catch, you know, 100 of them. But they didn't go up to Maine that often because the water's too cold. So I snag one, and the captain looks at me and he goes, I love fresh Atlantic sea bass. I want that fish from you. He goes, I'll trade you a trap. I said, okay, I'll trade the trap. So now for my family, it's myself and my parents, we have now 4 traps. Every trap, the first 3, pulled up 1 legal lobster. The 4th trap that we got from trading this fish pulled up 3 legal lobsters, including the Andre the Giant of Maine lobsters. Now, go back to remember what I said in the beginning of the story. My mom didn't eat seafood. There was 6 lobsters between my father and myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we did a big cookout that night, and we boiled all 6 of them. And just by chance, I happened to be watching a cooking show a few weeks prior to that. And the one guy on there, what he said he did, is he does like a boil and a grill. So he would take his lobster, if he's going to boil it 15 minutes, he'd put it in there for the first 8 minutes, take it out, break it in half, take the tail off, split it down the middle, season it with like lemon, garlic powder, and black pepper. He'd put the tail on the grill and then the top half of the lobster back in to finish boiling. So you'd have your claws and all that stuff would be boiled, but the tail would be grilled and seasoned. That shit is good. Yeah.
It's been a while since I had lobster. My ex-girlfriend's dad used to die for him, get him for free for us all the time. That was always nice.
Mom and
biggest
lobster.
I hit was 7 pounds. Here's just
make it a Valentine's Day. I'll make it a Valentine's Day date, take out a red lobster, and then leave it there.
I've never seen a red lobster, and I live in New England. I don't know how that is, but generally they don't have too many of them. I don't have enough of them, I guess. All right, well, we're going to take Blog Talk Radio Ladies' cue, I should say. And we're going to sign off for the week, and next week we'll have the big UFC event to talk about, and a lot more news, obviously. And that's about it. That's all I got.
Well, until next week, boys and girls, hasta la vista. And
all right, guys. Over and out.
Yeah, Tom should say enjoy the fight, but we have no fight to enjoy.
That's right. That's why I didn't say it tonight, okay? So I guess we'll have to live like normal people over the weekend for once.
Oh, good.
All right. Hasta luego.
All right. Thanks for stopping by.